This is West Southwest on WMUK. I'm Earlene McMichael. Coming up, I talk to the new president of the Metropolitan Kalamazoo branch of the NAACP. Young Kalamazoo minister and activist Strick Strickland suddenly found himself at the head of the civil rights organization when civil rights leader Charles Warfield died. Strickland took over the reins right before November's presidential election, an election that was closely watched by the national NAACP. That was because this was the first presidential election in more than 50 years where voters did not have the full protection of the Voting Rights Act. Parts of the Voting Rights Act have been repealed. Welcome to WMUK.
Thank you so much for having me, Arlene.
You took over some pretty big shoes from Dr. Charles Warfield, who was a big community leader here in the Kalamazoo area. He died in June. What position were you holding? Were you holding a position at the time in the NAACP?
Yes, ma'am. Actually, I had worked for about 4 years as the community coordinator for the NAACP branch.
The local one here?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Strick Strickland started off as interim president of the local NAACP, then recently was elected to a 2-year term. How'd that feel?
It's a great honor, you know, having worked alongside Dr. Warfield for many years and been very much a pupil of his and having a very close relationship with him. It was not only, you know, a professional opportunity for me, but it was also very much something that held a lot of sentiment.
You came to the community in, I believe, what, 2012 to take over pastorship of Second Baptist Church. When you took over Second Baptist Church, you took over from the Reverend Matthew Wright, who was pastor there for 39 years before retiring in 2009, and he actually died a year later. Did you ever meet him? Did you ever get a chance?
I did not have the luxury of meeting Pastor Wright. However, it has been an honor to stand on his shoulders and to continue the great work that is going on in the ministry of the historic Second Baptist Church.
And a really rising young leader.
I'm 34.
But you also hold a position, I believe, at the state level.
Yes, I've been serving as the state chaplain for the Michigan NAACP State Conference now for a little more than 4 years. I was installed in that position at the age of 30. I have been blessed to become the youngest state chaplain in the history of the organization. And so we're doing a lot of work with trying to make sure that the church stays relevantly involved with the fight and with the struggle for justice on every level.
At the national level, the NAACP has had a lot to say about the repealing of parts of the Voting Rights Act and how this is the first time in decades that voters haven't had the full protection of the Voting Rights Act during a presidential election. What does that mean?
Well, one of the major things that we need to be able to understand and how it's most relevant to us beyond just the legislation that we're looking at on a national level is that without the protection of that Voters' Rights Act, it gives various states the opportunity to pass legislation and reforms that continue to perpetuate voter suppression.
And I realize that you really are more a spokesperson at the local level. I think you are aware that the National NAACP did issue a statement indicating that there were acts of voter suppression and so on throughout the country during the recent presidential election.
One of the things that we did and one of the things that we do here on the local level, I was one of the challengers for Kalamazoo County. And we have individuals who go through our state training in order to be challengers at various precincts. We had incidents here in Kalamazoo County that were cited. We have incidents throughout our country, of course, that are on a much larger scale. I wouldn't want to go into the specifics of those situations because I don't know how to well represent all of those incidents because many of them are still under investigation at this point.
That happened during the most recent presidential election.
Absolutely.
What were at least some of the allegations of voter suppression here in the Kalamazoo area?
We had a couple of incidents here that were where we had individuals that were reportedly asked for identification and after not being able to provide identification were discouraged to vote.
So people actually went to a polling place, arrived without a photo ID, And you're allowed to, I believe, sign an affidavit according to the law and still vote. And what you're saying is they actually made it through right into the polling site. And you're saying that a poll worker told them they could not vote?
Allegedly. Those are some of the claims that we had. And that's not limited to just that information. That's the one that I'm most comfortable sharing, because we got about 7 different complaints at one particular precinct.
About that very same thing.
About that very same thing. At different times of the day. And all of those were reported to the state. And I'm sure that the state is still completing their investigation, because they have a team of people who...
The state of Michigan or the state NAACP?
The state NAACP, along with our allegiances with the state. Because what happens is we have a team that represents the NAACP that works with our state department and make sure that these things are, you know, investigated and dealt with properly.
So those 7 people who were allegedly told that they could not vote, did they in fact walk away, or did they press?
5 of them did vote and 2 of them did not.
Oh, so what you're saying is they insisted that they could vote.
About 4 of them actually were outside. They had left the line and they made the phone call. And someone reached out to me, and I was able to coach them over the phone and get them to go back in and tell them what to say between the time that I got to the actual precinct.
So what you're saying is 4 of them actually went to a worker, the worker told them they could not vote, and they walked away.
I can't speak to what the worker told them, but I can tell you that they stood in line long enough to make it to the worker. And that because they did not have identification,
they were turned away.
They were, for whatever reason, discouraged to vote, and they left.
And they left. And then they reached out to you. And as a result, 4 of those people, in fact, did vote.
5 of them total voted. And 4 of them left and came back.
I see.
One of them did not leave line. She was very persistent.
Then there are 2 who did not vote.
At all.
They just turned around. They left.
Correct.
Huh. And you have the names of all of those people.
Absolutely.
Have you reported that to, I'm trying to think of what the agency is here, the Kalamazoo County Clerk?
Well, our process through the NAACP is that our chain of communication during voters day is through our own political action resources. And so I have reported that information to them. They will finalize a thorough investigation and evaluation of the facts, and then they will be responsible for making sure that the appropriate people are contacted and that process is followed through with.
This is West Southwest on WMUK. We're talking to Strick Strickland, the new president of the Metropolitan Kalamazoo branch of the NAACP. Is there something in common with all those 7 voters? Is there an identifier? Is there something in common?
All of them are African American.
Were they men or are they women? Or
we had all women but 1. And one of the things that I will say about that is that, you know, it's very, very common for male subjects in that time of the year not to complain, or to just, you know, we're just not typically as persistent. There were accounts from those people that other people around them had been discouraged as well.
And they left.
But of course, we can only represent the facts that are provided to us. So that's what we do.
So just to be clear, the majority of the 7 were African-American females.
6 of them were African-American females, and 1 was a Hispanic male.
Do you think it was a simple misunderstanding of on the part of the poll worker in terms of the fact that you can sign an affidavit?
I really don't know. All of these occurrences were in the a.m. hours of our voting. And, you know, I would like to think that our county does a good job of making sure that all of our people are educated and understand the process thoroughly. But, you know, that's not always the case. And it quite possibly could have been out of ignorance. Whatever it's related to is still just as unacceptable. And we have to make sure that those types of things don't happen.
What are some of the issues on the national agenda for the NAACP the state level and also the local level here for the NAACP. I want to say that at your local Freedom Fund dinner, which was in November, was it not?
Uh-huh.
Right. I forget what the theme was, but I want to say it had something to do with voting. How did that go?
It was our vote counts and our lives matter.
Right. Our vote counts, our lives matter. So I know that that's also a theme at the national level.
Absolutely.
Tell us more about that.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, we want people to know that all lives matter and all votes count. And when we say our, it's very important that people don't identify that with just a race. You know, I can tell you, you know, I can certainly give you a more extensive understanding of where we're headed on a local level than on a state or a national level. And I can tell you that on the local level, we're working very hard to tear down some of the strongholds and some of the hurdles that have separated people who are all working together for the cause of civil justice and civil liberties. And we want to make sure that people understand that the NAACP has a rich heritage and history that works across racial lines, across lines of social status and all of those things. And so we're working to do all that we can to tear down those strongholds and to make sure that people understand when we say our lives matter and our vote count, we're speaking from an NAACP perspective and not just relevant to Black lives alone, but to all lives, to all of humanity.
And since you mentioned that, what some people may not realize is that right here on the local level, you have members and people who are active in your organization who are Caucasian.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And also in the early days and founding of the NAACP, this has always been a very consistent theme, just so that people understand that many people help and have been advocates for civil rights issues.
If people would ask me what I most value about the NAACP and why I feel that it's so important and that it's so relevant, it's really because of the diversity. It's because in 1909, when people were not having conversations across their various faith and belief principles, when people were not having conversations across their various party and their various preferences on a governmental level, the NAACP was having those conversations with that diverse crowd. You know, in 1909, there were about 70 people at that initial meeting, and only 7 of those people have been accounted for as African American. And you know, there were people of various ethnicities that helped this organization to get to where it is today. In the early 60s, Malcolm X criticized the NAACP for not having had a Black leader as the national president. So more than 60 years after the organization had been in existence, they still did not have a Black figurehead for the national president. No one. And this was a critical component for many people in the community and on a political level. And now that we've gotten to a place where we do have qualified African Americans who have taken the reins and who are in leadership roles within the national offices of this organization, it's still important that people understand that the history was not just built on Black America alone, but it was certainly a collaborative effort from all nationalities.
So you're saying the first 60 years of the NAACP, the executive director, they were white?
Absolutely. White men.
Some people may not have known that.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things and one of the strongest barriers that we have here in Kalamazoo is the fact that people don't understand how the NAACP works. And I don't think that it's just a Kalamazoo issue, but I can only speak relevant to the experiences that I have. And most of those have been in Kalamazoo. And the reality of it is that, you know, poor Black people feel as though the NAACP is for the upper echelon, the well-educated and the financially stable and all those individuals. They feel that this organization many times is some institution that is absent of the community, and it's really perpetuated and strengthened by the participation of the community. It's anchored by the community. White Americans and white Kalamazooans I've had people that we've solicited for membership that have, you know, asked me very honestly and very sincerely, said to me, I thought this was an organization for black people. And they didn't realize that they could even be members.
We can use this as a time to educate or re-educate. So what is the purpose of the organization and what are some tangible projects that you do here in the community?
Well, the overall purpose of the NAACP is to ensure a lack of discrimination and, of course, to confront race-based discrimination. But it's just one form of discrimination. We want to make sure that on a national level that we're protecting the rights of all individuals and that all social liberties are being protected. Those social liberties were not set forth by a community of people, a demographic of people, but they were set forth by the Constitution of our United States of America. So for a person to say I'm anti-NAACP is not to say I'm anti-black or I'm anti-white or I'm anti-religious. It's to say I'm almost anti-American, because every value that we have is based and founded and grounded and stabilized by the fact that it relates back to our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and all of the foundational elements of our democracy.
What are some of the programmatic thrusts of what you have right here in Kalamazoo? What are some of those areas? What are some of the standing things that you do?
Well, one of the things that people are probably most familiar with, that's probably our least favorable part of our work, is legal redress. Of course, with our legal redress team, we have the opportunity to help individuals who don't have who cannot afford legal advice. We have a team of individuals who help to advise them and help them to navigate the system when they feel as though they've been marginalized in any way. And beyond the legal redress side of things that people always see, we have educational committees. Our education committee works with our school system. We were actively involved in the recent superintendent's call for mentors within our school system. We were one of the first groups to
within Kalamazoo Public Schools
to start hosting events and trying to collect information and individuals to participate in those things. With the criminal justice side of things, we do a lot of things with our law enforcement to try to build and promote relationships within the department prior to incidents. And, you know, again, one of the things that happens with all of the programs that we have is that none of those things ever seem to get any real good media attention. And so a lot of times there's a little bit of negativity related to the organization simply because people only see us when it's a crisis going on, if they are not involved in some of the same work that we're doing.
Can you refresh my recollection again? The current, the new term that you're coming into, how long does that last? 1 year, 2 years?
2 years. 2 years? It's a 2 year term.
What is your agenda? I realize you work with an executive board, but what are some of the things you'd like to see moving forward in the next 2 years?
Well, I've hit on one of the most important things for me. I believe that my generation is absent from the struggle. However, we're not immune to it. And I think that we need to get more actively involved. Our community, being that communities of colors, community that lives beneath and right at the poverty lines, those individuals in white America who are, again, not actively involved and not actively participating in this struggle. I think that my work is to call those people into the fight and to say, hey, you know, let's work together. I want to resurface and rebrand our organization. And I really don't want to create a brand. You know, I'm not looking to do anything that's really that innovative. What I'm really hoping to do is to be accurate in the description of what the NAACP really is, what our principles are, what we're really striving to create within our community and within our communities across the country.
And when you say, you know, kind of my generation has been absent from the struggle, who do you mean?
Well, my generation and down.
Okay.
Let's say if you have individuals now 40 and younger, When you look around, most of us who are participating in any type of activism, all of us are usually the minority in the group. You know, we typically don't have a lot of our peers involved in those struggles. There was a time, for instance, right here on Western Michigan University's campus, that was a time when Western Michigan University had the largest college branch of NAACP in the state of Michigan. And that was a time when young people brought a certain energy and a certain passion to making sure that civil rights and that civil liberties and all of those things and the cause of social justice had some legs to walk on. They created that movement, and right now we just don't have that.
We have like the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee that were there back early in the days when the March on Washington
Absolutely.
In the 60s. Yeah, students were right there.
Students
they were at
there.
The forefront.
That's it. Yeah, I mean, you will have a difficult time pulling up any pictures of any events that took place in our previous, in the height of the civil rights era of the 60s. You'll have a hard time finding a picture that doesn't include some young person. Look back at those pictures and you'll have a hard time finding a person where you can't find a person that you know looks like they're in their late teen years or their early 20s.
It's interesting that you should say that, because I am noticing a resurgence of activism, certainly among the African-American youth on college campuses, in a way that it reminds me of the 80s with the anti-apartheid movement. It was young people, actually, who started the Black Lives Matter movement. Have you noticed that? And are you encouraged by that? Or is this news to you?
Well, you know, I'm encouraged by that. The difficult part for me to really get excited about the movements and the things that we have going on, especially surrounding Black Lives Matters, is the origin of the movement. The problem that I have is that, you know, what I like about the NAACP is the advancement component. I like that. I like that it's an organization that is not really built off being reactive. It's not a responsive organization. You know, we're built to do progressive and constructive things within our community. Sometimes the reactive things, again, get more media attention because the media feeds on the negativity and the tension and all of those other kind of components. I believe that the Black Lives Matters movement is a great movement. I believe that it has definitely encouraged a lot of young people to take very seriously their rights and to push and to strive and to encourage and to educate others concerning those rights. However, one of the major things that I would like to see is that some of those same individuals would involve themselves in progressive works beyond just responding to some of the negativity that's circulating right now in our country. And I think that the NAACP has an agenda to take some of those negativities and transition them into teachable moments that will hopefully be constructive for every area of our society.
As we close up here, this is an opportunity too for, as I said earlier, for listeners to get to know you.
Well, I was born and raised in a little town or settlement, basically, it's called Lewin, Mississippi. Population of maybe 2,000 people. And Lewin is, again, it's home for me. But growing up in rural Mississippi, of course, I had a lot of different experiences than most of the people here in Kalamazoo. And one of the things that I've oftentimes said that seems to be most startling to people here in Kalamazoo is that since 2012 here in Kalamazoo, I've probably experienced and spotted what I considered to be a more aggressive form of racism than what I encountered in rural Mississippi.
Can you give me a very quick example of, you say that the racism is a little more sophisticated here, and I understand what you mean by systemic racism, but I can't let that just hang out there.
Absolutely.
I want you to clarify.
You know, let me clarify one thing too. The racism here is not just racism, okay? It's staticism, it's tokenism. The racism in Kalamazoo is not predicated upon the color of your skin. You can buy your way out of being discriminated upon. you can educate your way out of being discriminated upon here in Kalamazoo. If you're a poor white person, then you are likely to find yourself victimized by some of the same systems that victimize African Americans. So Kalamazoo's system is not a system that, if you looked at statistics on paper, may represent just racism. You know, it's not going to be in black and white, because there's going to be some statistics there in the Hispanic community, in the white communities, that will not allow you to just call it racism. Okay, so that's one thing. The second thing beyond that is that it's what's amazing to me, if I had to give a exact situation that causes me to arrive at my opinion, it's based on the fact that, you know, if we look at our criminal justice system, the only people that get in trouble in Kalamazoo are poor people. If you go down to West Michigan today and go to the courthouse and you sit in the courthouse and you watch who's coming through, you don't see anybody, you know, dressed nice going into court. You don't see, and the reality or the belief that poor people are the only people that commit crimes, I just have a hard time digesting that. When we look at where we patrol, when we look at the people that we target, we've already had a chief and a administrative staff of our public safety to perform research to find out if in fact we racial profile, and we do. It's I mean, this is a fact. And so it's my experience living here in Kalamazoo, and I live, you know, right on the north side. I don't live, you know, in Portage, so I've got a real good viewpoint. I've got a real accurate assessment of what goes on in that community and on that side of town. And I can tell you that, you know, my assessment is that the policing on that side of town is very different than the policing is on, you know, on the west side of town. And when we look at some of the more well-off areas.
I had the police chief in here recently, and he did talk about that traffic study that was done, and certainly acknowledged what had gone on with that. And they're trying to kind of move forward and do some different things like community policing and all those types of things. Certainly will take time to see some results. Are you encouraged by that?
You know, let me say this. Chief Hadley, I love the guy. I mean, he's a great guy. He and I, if we were working in two different capacities, we may be fishing buddies or something. But the reality of it is, you know, our professions many times give us a little bit of an abrasive conversation and role and opinion. And I do believe that his heart is in the right place when it comes to how he wants to see his department perform. I don't know that we're targeting the real issue. The real issue for me is not, you know, every time that we talk about something that needs to be done concerning public safety or education or any of those critical components of our society, we're always talking about training. And I don't know that training is always the answer. I believe that training is definitely where you start. But I think that beyond training, at some point you have to get to a place of accountability. And I think that at some point, that accountability has to turn a little punitive. And what I'm not seeing is, I'm seeing a department that says that they want to see some things change. But I think that when we have an opportunity to hold officers accountable, most of the time, not just in Kalamazoo, but throughout our country, we fail to do so.
Mr. Strickland, thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome. And thank you.
We've been talking to Strick Strickland, the new president of the Metropolitan Kalamazoo branch of the NAACP. For West Southwest on WMUK, I'm Earlene McMichael.